Thank you, members, and to those of you watching, we're sorry we're starting a little late. We're kind of waiting for a quorum of our members here so we can immediately start taking some action on amendments. We have on the table Senate file 2869 as amended yesterday by a delete everything amendment, and I'm going to hand the gavel over to our Vice Chair, Senator Larson, so that the Chair, I have an author's amendment and one other amendment I'd like to do to get us started.
Senator Bach.
Chair moves the A-26 amendment.
Senator Bach moves the A-26 amendment.
Members, this is an author's amendment. It's mostly technical changes, and the only substantial change in is when we picked up the language for the North Mankato sales tax, we inadvertently picked up the language from last year's tax bill rather than from the conference committee. So this picks up the language from the conference committee report last year. We'll have council walk through the other small changes in it.
Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, members, the first several lines through line 7 are corrections to the LGA provisions. The Mendota LGA addition was increased by $10,000. There's some technical changes. A provision on amending page 11, line 10, would make it clear that would provide that no city would get less aid in 2009 than it had received in the previous year. So that's a substantial change from this. The rest are technical. The addition of section 216B.1646 is a provision that had been in last year's bill that enabled electric utilities to get rate adjustments in recognition of the increased property taxes they'll be paying under this bill. Technical correction of the bovine TB credit. Excuse me. The amendments on pages 31 have to deal with the effective dates for the electric generation property tax, and those were established a year too late in the bill that you had before you, so this bumps those effective dates up by 1 year. And then the remainder on pages 46 through 53 have to do with a conforming amendment for the pollution control equipment expenditures. That was part of a department bill that was inserted in this bill. There's changes to the Mankato sales tax to make it consistent with what had been in the conference committee report last year. The new section on the top of page 3 was inadvertently left out of the draft. This is a part of Senator Langseth's proposal having to do with aggregate taxes. This deals with the distribution of the proceeds of the taxes. The new section 13 on page 3 of the amendment starting at line 26 is just a clarification that for purposes of the definition of the taconite tax area, the fact that some electric generating plants are no longer subject to a property tax exemption does not change the status of any of those for qualifying as a taconite facility in the definition of the tax relief areas. The remainder of that page and through the end of the amendment actually are technical corrections to provisions that were in the department articles.
Senator Bach moves the A-26 amendment. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the A-5 amendment.
Senator Bach moves the A-5 amendment.
Members, this is an amendment for the Mall of America expansion. We heard about it yesterday. It is largely along the same lines as what we had in the bill last year, except it does not have the fiscal disparities contribution from phase one, and that seemed to be where most of the heartburn was. So I'd like to have council go through the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, this amendment, the first section does affect the fiscal disparities. It is a different version of a fiscal disparities provision. In last year's bill, there was an addition to the fiscal disparities equal to the amount of the Mall of America project. This modifies that so that other commercial industrial properties in the metropolitan area would not see an increase in their a direct increase in their contribution. Instead, this provides that the amount of the fiscal disparities revenue that is generated from just phase two of the Mall of America project will be distributed to the city of Bloomington. Section 2 is the same provision that was included in last year's bill with respect to the second tax increment financing district at the Mall of America. It's the same dimensions that were in last year's bill, which provides that a certain amount of property that had been included in the first tax increment financing district would instead be transferred to this new tax increment, the newer tax increment district. And the proceeds of the taxes from or the increments from this district would be used for infrastructure costs. This contains the same provisions that were in last year's bill dealing with the specifications on the public hearing, entering into agreements with the developers, dealing with the use of American-made steel, and prohibiting the inclusion of a large auditorium. The bill contains the same provision dealing with living wages that was in last year's draft and affordable access. There's a new provision starting on page 5, line 15, that's a requirement of a labor peace agreement with hotel workers. So that's one addition from last year that was not in last year's bill. Section 3 is the authorization for the city of Bloomington to impose local taxes to be used to finance the parking facility at phase 2. This specifies that if a governing entity other than the city of Bloomington issues the bonds, Bloomington has the authority to transfer the funds that are made available under this act to pay the debt service on those bonds. In subdivision 2 on page 6, the sales tax is the same as it was in last year's proposal, as is the lodging. Well, the lodging tax in subdivision 3 is changed so that it must be, if it is imposed by the city, it must be imposed at a rate between 0.75% and 1%, and it's required to be imposed on lodging facilities throughout the city at the same rate. This also would be required to be imposed if the city intended to access the revenues under the fiscal disparities provision. So that's another change from last year. The admissions and recreation tax is the same as last year, as is the food and beverage tax. Those are just at the mall site, both phases 1 and 2. There's a new lodging tax provision on subdivision 6, starting on line 23 of page 6. And that would authorize the city of Bloomington to take the proceeds of any of its existing lodging taxes to the extent that they're imposed on lodging facilities that are newly constructed in the phase two tax increment district, and enables the city to use the proceeds of the lodging tax at those facilities for purposes of this act rather than the existing uses, which are for the financing or the funding of the metropolitan sports area or for the marketing and promotion of the city by the Convention Bureau. And this would just apply to the extent that these taxes were not contractually obligated to be spent for some other purpose. That's it.
The AA5 amendment is before us. The member has, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I just want to say that I think when we're putting in, I believe, about $200 million in tax increment financing, or public money, largely to build a parking ramp is the infrastructure I think this was largely going to pay for a shopping mall, a nice shopping mall. I know it'll create jobs, but I think we could create jobs by also building schools and roads and a whole bunch of other things, and I guess I realize this is likely to be added to the bill. I just wish it wasn't. I don't think it's – we've got a lot of other very pressing needs. And one way or another, tax increment financing money is public money, and we're using public money to build a parking ramp for a shopping mall. And I guess I just don't think that's the decision we ought to be making. But.
Any other discussion on the A5 amendment?
You might want to
questions for the author? Seeing none, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
Are there other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sklai.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A15 amendment, and perhaps while that's being passed out, I think the department wanted to comment briefly on the Green Acres provision. The A15 amendment is mostly small changes that have been made as discussions have gone on with regard to the Green Acres program and all. Just is it being passed out yet? I'll just go through what's in here, and as you get it, you can ask questions. The first part of the amendment is just clarifying that while Conservation Reserve Program land is classified as agriculture, it does not qualify for Green Acres. We are doing some clarifying for these small farms that are providing produce to farmers market that they would qualify for Green Acres program if they're primarily for market farming. We also have included a provision in here to get at some of the smaller animal agriculture production that's in the metropolitan area that they would qualify for Green Acres. There is a provision in here dealing with the split classification for some of these small parcels. And then the last part is a study that inadvertently got dropped from the property tax article that the department should continue to study and review and update the alternative valuation for agriculture. And I think Mr. Folkman had some comments he wanted to make. I would move the A15 amendment.
Mr. Volkman from the department.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gordon Folkman, Director of the Property Tax Division, Minnesota Department of Revenue. And I just wanted to thank Senator Sklai for working on the Green Acres legislation. We feel this is very important that this be addressed this session. The Senate bill begins to address many of the issues that the Office of Legislative Auditor's Office identified in their report and also what we identified in our 2007 bulletin. The Green Acres provisions specifically are starting to address some of the policy and direction concerns we had with the agricultural classification, especially for smaller parcels. It starts to address the classification of split class authority for assessors. It provides some research and provides the DOR with the responsibility to come up with a Green Acres valuation methodology and annually review that to make sure that it is sensitive to regional differences throughout the state. It identifies what type of property should be eligible for Green Acre benefits, which was another important policy direction from the Office of Legislative Auditor's report. It starts to begin to address some of the issues around income qualification criteria, and importantly, too, equally important, creates the new rural vacant land classification. We understand that there are some other policy issues that need to be addressed, and we're also anticipating some language from the House. And we're looking forward to working with the legislature, county assessors, and other stakeholders to try and craft a bill that can be very useful for us going forward this session. Thank you.
Mr. Volkman, thank you. Senator Sklai moves the A15. Any discussion, members? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A15 is adopted. Other amendments. Senator Sklai.
Mr. Chair, I have two other amendments. This, the next one is the A9 amendment. And members, this is a provision that's an idea that's been around for quite a while. I actually thought that I had included it in the property tax article. The A9 amendment requires a taxing authority to use the previous year's final levy if the city has failed to certify its proposed levy by due date. This is something that the auditors and I have been talking about for quite a while, and it makes pretty good sense, and I think we should allow them to use the previous levy if they don't get it certified as timely as they should.
So
discussion? Senator Pogemiller.
Get them certified.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, we don't know exactly all the reasons why some jurisdictions are unable to certify as timely as they would, but currently they're thinking that they would have to use a zero levy if they, we didn't have this language, and we don't think that that's a good option either. So we're trying to, well, we'll continue to keep pressure on them to have them certify timely. It does occasionally happen that they can. And we're just trying to find some options for them, and I think that if the auditors are here, Ms.
Senator,
come over forward and help us out.
I guess I would like to hear why somebody doesn't get this done.
Mr. Chair and Senators, my name is Kevin Corbett. I am the Director of Property Records and Taxpayer Services in Washington County. I'm testifying on behalf of the County Auditors Legislative Committee. This actually came out of Washington County. We had a circumstance where a city was deadlocked in a 2-2 vote on its proposed budget, which they certified to the county for our truth and taxation process. The city then inquired of us, if they do not certify and cannot come to a conclusion on this, what would be sent out on the truth and taxation notices? We reviewed the law that was in place. The law says that for final levies, if there's a failure to certify, we use last year's levy. There's no language in law that says what we do if they fail to certify for the proposed levies in September. So the county auditor was put in a position of either saying it was last year's levy or it was zero, no levy. And frankly, you know, we were in the middle of a discussion between the city council in that case. So we wanted some clarification that if there's a failure to certify, that the levy that the county auditor should use is the final levy from last year, which would be a, you know, a 0% increase over the previous year.
So,
Senator Pogemiller.
So this just aligns the proposal versus, because the current law for the final levy already does this.
Yes. Senator Pogemiller, we shouldn't have to do this, but apparently we do. Senator Skoy moves to A9. Any other discussion, members? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A9 is adopted.
I have
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A21 amendment.
Senator Skoy, the A21.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a little larger issue. When I was on the school board in Clearbrook-Gonvick School District in 1992 or thereabouts, there was a change in the way that transportation was funded across the state, and we went from a formula that dealt with students and miles to a fixed amount per student across the state. This works fairly well in school districts where the students are pretty concentrated, but for these large rural school districts that are very sparse, they are just unable to provide the transportation under the fixed amount that the state is now paying schools for transportation. This amendment would allow the school districts that have sparsity revenue to levy themselves for some of their transportation costs, and it's what is needed to do in order for these schools to continue to offer quality education to their students.
Let me just say on the A21, there is a serious, we all know what's happening with transportation costs with $4 diesel fuel and these districts with large transportation costs are having a really increased burden. Many of them also are having declining enrollment at the same time, so their budgets are pretty stretched. On the A21, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, is this something that should have been discussed by the Education Committee?
It was discussed between the tax chairman and the and the education finance chairman last night, and it's actually their language, Senator Pogemiller.
Well, how about that whole committee? I could see the education finance chair and the tax chair supporting this. I'm not sure about the full education committee.
Senator Pogomar, I believe there's going to be an what we're uncertain of is the education finance bill is going to come to this committee next week. But we're a little uncertain how that process is going to work because the finance bill is already going to be on the floor of the Senate. And it kind of seems like the education finance provisions are just coming here as a courtesy. So we're a little uncertain if we were to amend this into the education finance bill next Tuesday here, how we would get it amended into the finance bill on the floor of that's already sitting on the floor of the Senate next week. So this is an effort to avoid a floor amendment and no discussion on the subject.
Well, but Mr. Chairman, this typically is the kind of thing that is delicately balanced between the various regions of the state when you're putting together an educational finance bill. Because this is providing revenue for some districts and not other districts.
But Senator Pogomar, it's all local revenue. It's not equalized. It's allowing them to levies for some significant increases in their transportation costs.
It certainly is allowing some districts to get more revenue than other districts.
Senator Pogomar, two of those districts that are going to be able to get more money under this have zero, I know at least two because they're in my district, have zero excess operating levy. They've tried to pass them, can't get them passed. So somehow we have to give some of those districts with huge transportation needs an opportunity to levy for it. The cost of buses and transportation and $4 diesel fuel when they aren't able to get an excess operating levy passed.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogomar.
But they are already getting elementary and secondary sparsity revenue from the state.
That's correct.
And if that revenue is not adequate, then they should be asking for relief there. And I think the balance just seems to me this is an issue that should be discussed in the Education Finance Committee.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand what Senator Skoy is trying to accomplish. You know, the issue of sparsity and, you know, distance is big, and I support that. I just wanted to articulate, you know, because I've been looking at the student transportation issue for some time, that there are other issues that are driving costs as well in our student transportation system. You know, and I would just direct folks to the Legislative Auditor's Report. They're big issues. I mean, there are legitimate issues that we can't do anything about, but there are a lot of things that school districts can do in managing that function better than they do now. Manage, you know, developing better contracts with the private providers, understanding exactly the function. This is a more of a student transportation policy discussion. If anyone hasn't read the Legislative Auditor's Report, I would encourage them to. There's great, great disparity among school districts in how well they manage that function, what's driving the costs, you know, whether or not they're tending to that whole function very closely, particularly as it relates to the private providers. Private providers, ostensibly, they enter into those contracts with the goal of saving money, and invariably they end up spending more money for student transportation than keeping these operations in-house.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This issue has been around for a while, as you guys are all aware. The Richfield School District is exactly the same number of students as the Bemidji School Districts. They're running around a $500,000 or $600,000 surplus in their transportation funding, and the Bemidji School District is running a comparable deficit. And this is an effort to get at the needs of these large rural school districts that just can't provide transportation under their current scenario. And Senator Pogomiller, I would hope that the K-12 funding division would do some work for funding schools this year, but I don't know where they're headed either, and I just think this is a needed change.
Senator Pogomiller.
It may be. Don't you think it's a little unusual for the tax committee to start doing this type of thing, because there may be other good ideas that we could all think of here that for some reason they weren't able to take up in the Ed Funding Committee this year that we think should be taken up, and therefore we start to take them up. So it's not really the merits of the issue. I don't know the merits, but I do know that the chair of that committee is very interested in the sparsity issue, and I would be surprised if that chair wasn't willing to discuss this issue if it was of that much importance this year.
Other discussion? On the 821 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
No. Motion prevails. 821 is adopted.
Prevails?
Prevail?
Prevails?
Mm. Prevails.
I'd like Senator a Johnson. Division.
Senator Johnson would like a division.
And based on, I agree with Senator Pogemiller. I think this is a categorical, and that a lot of other districts could actually use this.
Senator Johnson, do you want a division?
I do.
All in favor, raise your hand.
Understand.
We're all guys. Opposed, against? Ooh, the chair's hearing wasn't that good. Motion does not prevail. 5-4.
Mr. Chair, I have the A6.
Why wouldn't Leroy take it?
Mr. Chairman, this is actually Senator Betzold's bill. He had it heard in state and local government last year and asked for a hearing in this committee but hasn't gotten it, and I'd like to get it in the bill. It's for Anoka County Libraries. It's giving some levy authority to raise the debt service. And I have Lona Schreiber from Anoka County to answer any questions.
Senator Johnson moves to A6. Schreiber, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Lona Schreiber. I'm the Intergovernmental Coordinator for Anoka County. And Anoka County is unique to many counties in that it requested the special authority in 84 so it could build and develop a county library system. The county's...
Senator Betzel, thank you.
We do have a unique system. We have only one city-run library in our county. All the other cities, 20 cities, enjoy the library services paid for totally by the county. And in order to accomplish this, a special law was passed back in 84 that gave us additional bonding authority. And in the law, it says we can bond up to 1% of the taxable market value or a dollar limitation of $1,250,000. That dollar limitation now is no longer workable. Inflation is... we have one more library we need to build on the east side of the county, and we aren't able to build it because of this dollar limitation. What we're seeking here is that the dollar limitation be removed. The 0.01% of taxable market value would bring that dollar limitation to close to $3 million. So, and then from then on, it will float. Senator Betzel?
Senator Betzel.
And Mr. Chair, members, this bill was heard last year by the State and Local Government Operations Committee, and then I believe it was heard here in the Tax Committee. I think there was no intent, I think we said last year, and it's still true, there's no plan to go that high to 0.1%. But that's, you know, that's the maximum, and this is a 1984 law that we're dealing with, so it probably is time to revisit it to give us some more flexibility in the libraries.
Any discussion? Does anybody else want to testify on the A6 amendment? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A6 is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We should ask him.
Chairman?
Senator Pogemiller, Council.
Did we actually do something for Anoka County that didn't cause a 10-hour debate?
Senator Pogemiller, we didn't have any questions.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, it's all in the timing.
Okay.
Council?
Mr. Chair, members, it's been brought to my attention that there's a provision in one of the department articles that conflicts with a substantive provision
in the local government aid article. So I would recommend that on page 166, we would, on page 166, delete section 35, because that was intended to be a technical correction to an LGA provision, and it conflicts with the substantive change that's in Article 1, Section 12.
I'd move that.
Senator Pogelmeier moves that on page 166, delete section 35. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogelmeier.
I have the A-10. Chairman.
Senator Pogelmeier, the A-10 amendment.
The A-10 is a fix to a small TIF provision that I think we did about 2 years ago here. It's related to a homeless assistance tax increment district in downtown Minneapolis. It's kind of by the south of the Target Center and First Avenue. There's a motel there that people may be familiar with. It's kind of by the freeway entrance. And they're trying to do a homeless shelter there, a fairly significant project. And at the time we passed it, they had calculated that the size of the area was 6 acres, but apparently it's 8 acres. So this just changes the area. I don't think it fundamentally alters the I don't think it's trying to drag in any building that wasn't considered as part of the project before.
Does the city of Minneapolis have an opinion on this?
I think they support it. It was brought to me by Minneapolis, and this doesn't bring in the IDS center or anything, does it?
City supports it?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Gene Ranieri with the IGR department for the city of Minneapolis. We did support the original bill. We did approve it as a special bill. This does not change any boundaries. It basically counts the streets, so we have no problem.
Oh.
Counts the right-of-way, which wasn't counted before.
Okay, Senator Pogelmeier renews his motion that the A-10 be adopted. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A-10 is adopted. Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, I have the, I'll call it the A-108, 15, 16 amendment.
Holy mackerel.
And I hopefully will have some more copies somewhere. But if I could begin.
Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair and members, this is an amendment effectually to reinstate within the tax bill and within Minnesota statutes the Job Z program. Senator Bach, a program that you authored a couple of years ago, a program which I think while may not, you can always find its deficiencies, I think, generally speaking, it's a program that we need to hang on to and continue to allow to work, and particularly in greater Minnesota where the needs for jobs and job creation is great. This amendment, Mr. Chair, attempts to deal with the issues that were brought forward by the legislative auditor in terms of state-level criteria, in terms of looking at more specifically and emphasizing the economic distressed areas of Minnesota and really focusing on that. So, Mr. Chair, I think we all know this program. We either like it or not, but I think it's a program that I think is vitally important. As you look at the ability for any city or municipality or county really to grow jobs in Minnesota, there are no programs without this. There is certainly TIF, but beyond that, we are very sparse in our ability to produce jobs and with respect to incentive programs. So, again, Mr. Chair and members, this is the Job Z program. I've got some witnesses here from Deed and one or two communities, if the committee dares or wants to hear them, and if that would be the case, I would appreciate their testimony.
Senator Senjum, I think we'll hear from the department, but my question is the contents of this amendment, is this the contents of the Rosen bill, or is it something else?
Mr. Chair, could I refer to the person that really put this author's amendment or this amendment together and get that input?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Loftus. I'm Director of Business and Community Development at Deed. Yes, Mr. Chairman, this does represent the Rosen Amendment in its entirety, Rosen Bill, I'm sorry, with the addition of the language that was discussed in Senator Metzen's committee concerning the five-job minimum. We've included that element into the proposed language as well.
Well, members, the Rosen Bill is in our possession, and our intent was to hear it and a number of other member bills once we get the tax bill out into the floor. So I think, having not heard the bill yet, I think it's pretty hard for us kind of on the fly to make a bunch of changes to the Job Z program. But, Senator Senjum, we are going to hear that bill, if not next week, the week after.
And, Mr. Chair, if that be the case, and I wasn't aware of that, if this has an opportunity to get a fair hearing and a good decision, and I, of course, I can coach you on that, but if it is going to come forward again, why don't I, at least for today, pull this amendment and with the understanding that we'll hear it another day.
Senator Senjum, I appreciate that, and we will hear the Rosen bill along with, we've had a number of members request to hear other bills also, and we're going to start scheduling some of them next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Senjum withdraws the A081516. Thank you. Council has one more technical cleanup amendment, and then we're going to go to Senator Ortman. Senator Larson moves to A29. Council?
Mr. Chair, members, this is a cleanup amendment to the seed capital investment credit that was recommended by the department. It just clarifies that the maximum amount of the credit would be $112,500. There had been an alternative maximum, or not to exceed the lesser of that, or the liability for the tax. According to the advocates, the intention was to have the maximum be the $112,500 amount.
Members, this is the Langset provision that accesses Border City credit under the Border Cities program. On the 829, any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. 829 is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I'll defer to Senator Dibble.
Senator Dibble.
Okay, thanks. I have the 19 amendment, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, the A19 amendment is an issue that was raised last year, and it has to do with how we tax kind of open space recreational property, golf courses, et cetera. This adds to that language soccer and allows also kind of the adjacent land that's used for related purposes. And Ms. Chair, I have Kathy Haney at the table who can help explain in more detail what we're hoping to accomplish.
Ms. Haney?
Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Kathy Haney. I'm a lawyer at Fagerty & Benson, and I represent HPPS, that is a company that has an interest in working on soccer field development. And with me I have Ms. Candace Daly, who is the executive director of the Minnesota Youth Soccer Association, who will take a minute and amplify on the need in Minnesota for additional soccer fields. But let me just first amplify a little bit on what Senator Dibble said. Under current law, we have a tax treatment for private outdoor recreational space that encourages private development. And included in that tax treatment are uses as follows: golf, firearms range, archery, polo, croquet, lawn bowling, and skiing. So what the assessor is directed to do in these privately owned open space uses is assess them as open space as opposed to highest and best use. And the valuation, the higher valuation, is deferred for as long as these uses remain in existence. Any buildings or commercial structures on any of these properties, as well as if you chose to add soccer, would be valued at the higher use and not given any sort of preferred tax treatment. It's only the open space for these uses that is given sort of the deferred lower tax treatment in order to encourage those uses and encourage open space. We have also worked, this language, the word soccer was in last year's bill. We have worked since with the Tom May of the Hennepin County Assessor's Office to codify additional language that is meant to put in statute the way these properties are currently assessed, kind of the methods they use, to make it a little more uniform. And it's my understanding that he approves the language, and he's also run it by the Department of Revenue, but they could speak for themselves if you have a question. But I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Candace Daly, if I could, for a minute.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, thank you for your time. As Kathy said, my name is Candace Daly, and I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Youth Soccer Association. We serve roughly about 80,000 youth soccer players throughout the entire state of Minnesota. Soccer is the most widely played sport throughout the world, and the number of soccer players in the United States and in the state of Minnesota continue to increase every year. A matter of fact, soccer is the second most played sport by our youth in the United States, just right behind basketball. Our organization, we represent about 140 different member clubs throughout the state, and our mission is to provide access to as many youth that are interested in playing the sport of soccer as possible. And one of the biggest challenges that our organization has had over the last 5-6 years has been access to field space. And that is true whether the teams are located in the city of Minneapolis, the city of St. Paul, suburbs, or in the outside of the metropolitan area. We have teams in the city of St. Paul who are traveling to Woodbury or other suburbs in order to find fields to practice on and play games on. Teams in the city of Minneapolis are traveling to southern and western suburbs in order to have access to fields. Some of our teams in the outside of the metropolitan area are actually playing on hay fields that farmers have given them access to. So our organization, we're very interested in partnering with others in the state in order to provide more open field spaces for our young players that are interested in playing soccer or perhaps, you know, other sports. So especially given the fact that we've got childhood obesity is on the rise and a lot of other challenges that our young people face, you know, we feel anything that we can do to provide a healthy environment and other opportunities for the youth in our state is a positive thing. So we'd really appreciate your support.
Ms. Daly, how do we avoid this as being used as a largely a speculative venue on the part of somebody who wants to, you know, develop a soccer field, which is a large tract of land? There's very little capital investment. Mm-hmm. And unlike a golf course or a ski hill where there's a large capital investment, somebody could dedicate some land just outside of the Twin Cities for a soccer field complex, make very little capital investment, but get preferential tax treatment and essentially be used as a way to reduce the cost of holding the land for speculative purposes. How do we prevent that?
Well, I guess, you know, our organization and a lot of our member clubs, you know, we're interested in partnering with other private organizations. And most, for the most part, a lot of things that we're interested in would be where we would partner with others in the community to provide not only open field space for soccer, but for a number of other different venues and uses. And very much focused on what are the needs of that community and not just solely on soccer.
In addition, Mr. Chair, if I might add.
Ms. Haney.
I think in part you rely on the assessors. I think in part the thrust of your question is they would use it for soccer for a number of years and then preserve sort of the ownership of the use. But they do have to use it. The primary use of that open space has to be for soccer, and the tax treatment is only deferred. So as soon as they stop using it for soccer or golf or skiing or whatever the listed use is, they have to then repay the preferential tax treatment that they had and go back to the highest and best use. So I don't think there's a gain, as far as the way I see it, for a developer to do that.
Ms. Haney, that clawback provision applies if they change the use within the first how many years?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's 7 years.
So if that individual who owns that complex waits until the 8th year or the 9th year to sell the land, do they have to pay back back taxes?
I don't believe so, Mr. Chair.
That's the weak point in the legislation, I think. Senator Skoy, this seems like Green Acres. You know more about Green Acres than me. Tell me why this is a good or bad idea.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think you've hit on the concern. This is private soccer fields, not the community-owned soccer fields. But the question that I was having is the language that you're adding at the end, including land used for the conduct of the activities described in this section. I don't understand the rationale for adding that. We're talking about the land for the soccer field or the golf or the skiing. What's that language? Why is that language there?
Mr. Chair, Bonnie. Senator Skoy. That is intended to address the ancillary land you need for whether it's parking or the land under a maintenance shed. Again, none of the buildings get preferential treatment, but you do need to have some land around, whether it's a clubhouse or whatever. And that, to the degree that that parking is needed for the specific recreational use, also is part of the open space. And that's all that's intended to do. And we've spent some time with May working through that language for that purpose.
And Senator Skoy, what about on line 1.8 where it says, or other related recreational uses? That seems like a pretty big expansion. What does that mean?
Senator Bach, that is not viewed as an expansion. What the old language was that it had to be exclusively used, and what we're finding, whether it's at a ski hill that has maybe a wedding on the grounds in the summer, or a golf course that's doing the same, or has adjacent tennis courts. I mean, it's meant to not exclude those sort of related uses and allow them to continue to be open space. But again, it is only the land. It is not any buildings. And it's just the related ancillary uses. But you have to have your primary use as being one of your listed sports.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Haney, so you're the private golf course, and now there's going to be a change for the land under the clubhouse and the parking lots and the maintenance shed and the golf cart storage area in the way the property taxes are assessed on that golf course?
Senator Bach, Senator Skoy, no, it is not a change in the current assessments. The way in Tom may maybe want to join me, but the way it is currently assessed is that land is treated as open space. And so all that language is intended to do is codify and provide some uniformity to current assessment practices.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Haney, so if it's currently being assessed that way, this language is just to give the assessors some language to rationalize what they're currently doing?
Senator
Sonny.
Mr. Chair, Senator Skoy. We always have a past experience with other assessment practices, other bills, and you've probably experienced this. We don't always have uniform assessment practices across the state, although we certainly the assessors attempt to. And also sometimes when people enter these ventures, they're not clear as to what the assessment practices will be. So it's intended to tell people, here's how we assess it.
Mr. Chair, you know, last year we did include soccer fields. This rest of this language is different than what we've done in the past, so I'm not exactly clear on what we're
Senator Dibble, last year on line 1.8 we did include soccer, but all the new language after that we did not include. How would you feel about modifying the amendment to include what we had in last year's bill and just deleting all the new language after soccer?
Sounds like a compromise, Mr. Chair.
Senator Scoy, would that help?
Mr. Chair, that would help.
Seems like a pretty significant change, the other language, I think.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, can I just amend my amendments?
Senator Dibble moves that on the A-19 amendment, after the new inserted word soccer on line 1.8, you'd delete all the other new language on 1.8, 1.9, and 1.10. And he incorporates that into the A-19. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The A-19 as amended is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members.
Actually, it wasn't amended.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogelner.
Chairman, on that one, I sure hope the conference looks at that closely because I think you got a problem here still. Because why wouldn't you add baseball and football?
Senator Pogelner, I think you're right. They're large tracts of land that require very little capital investment. It would be very easier to speculate on.
So I think you were being kind, Mr. Chairman, to take this much, but I hope you look at it very closely in the conference.
There's a reason, Mr. Senator Pogelner, that it wasn't in the bill when it was presented to the committee. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I would offer the A8 amendment.
A8, Senator Ortman, 8?
The A8.
Like an 8 food?
As in, I ate breakfast this morning.
Senator Ortman moves the A8. Page 14. Mm-hmm. Senator Ortman, on the A8 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. If you look at page 14 of our bill, yesterday we had a conversation about the specifics of and specific restrictions on the use of local government aid or mandates for the use of local government aid, and I think that that is unprecedented in the state of Minnesota and in the tax committee, and I know that there have been efforts to do this in the past from Democrats, from Republicans, from governors, and we have resisted it, and there's a good reason for having resisted this. It's that they are elected officials. City councils should do with that LGA what they think is in the best interests of their cities, and they should be the ones to prioritize the use of those funds. And so in that spirit, I've offered the A8 amendment, which would delete sections 17 and 18 from page 14 of the bill.
So, members, what we're talking about here is removing the neighborhood revitalization program language in Minneapolis, which was a Taurus Ray provision, and removing the LGA commitment to the River Center debt in St. Paul. Senator Pogelner.
Mr. Chairman, I think the amendment's a good one. I think the argument is exactly the correct argument.
On the A8 amendment.
Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion? Senator Watt.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would hope that members would vote against the amendment. When I presented my TIF extension bill the other day, I mentioned the fact that we are operating in extraordinary times and that sometimes we make exceptions. And so this is an instance where I asked for members to support me to keep this language in the bill. As we move forward, we might try to see if there's other things that we can do, but I would hope that the members of the committee would support me to keep this language in the bill. And so I oppose the A8 amendment.
And Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Moore, the amendment is offered not with a criticism of the proposals. They're very good proposals. And the projects are extremely good projects. I just worry about the precedent of doing that. It could happen then in every city. For whatever goal the legislature has for that city, and I think that's where we start to get in over our heads when we decide what the goals for our individual cities should be.
Well, Ms. Chair, Senator Ormond, I appreciate your comments. I, of all people, appreciate the adherence and the caution about setting precedent. But I might say that I rarely ever come to this committee to divert or to detour. And we are operating extraordinary times, and my city is experiencing tremendous distress. And so I guess I would allow other cities to make their case. But I hope that I've made my case, and I would like to support this committee to keep the language in.
Senator Pogler.
Chairman, Senator Moa, though, if your city wants to do this with their LGA, they can do it. The issue that Senator Ortman points out is us telling them to do it. And I think she's exactly right. That is a terrible precedent to set. And I think we would rue the day that we started to do that.
Senator Ortman, how about to help keep this issues in play for the people that support both of those projects in Minneapolis and St. Paul, if we change the word must to may?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that changes current law then. The effect then is meaningless. I mean, I appreciate your attempt to try to negotiate this, but I do think it's an important precedent. I'm also extremely concerned about those neighborhoods. I know they're in distress, and it's part of the work for me here at the Senate this year is to work on a reinstatement bill for foreclosed properties. But I just think we go down a slippery slope here, and there's no regaining this precedent. And so I hate to disagree with Senator Moore, but in this case, I think that this is an important amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to your suggestion, but just to the amendment. I do appreciate your effort, Mr. Chair, in trying to help us grapple with the issue of NRP and the Target Center. And I understand what you're trying to do, and I appreciate that. And I know that the committee has probably a lot of heartburn over extending the pre-79 TIF districts. Raises three or four major public policy precedents that a lot of people are struggling with. You know, fiscal disparities, LGA. You know, do TIF districts ever go away? You know, when do we consider increment, excess, et cetera? Nevertheless, I'm committed. I just need to say publicly to figuring out NRP and how we maintain that. That's very valuable. I do appreciate this amendment because I think Senator Pogomar is right. Setting this kind of a precedent, earmarking LGA, I mean, I have a pretty bad taste in my mouth going back to a couple years ago, the example that council cited when there was some really unfortunate things that were being said by certain parties that reside in this building. So I think Senator Pogomar is right. We probably don't want to go down this path either. So we don't have a good answer yet for NRP. We've got to keep working on it, understand what you're trying to do.
I think the only issue is, and I agree with everything we're saying about precedent. I had just hoped that we could keep a discussion going in the conference committee on the NRP program and on the Target Center debt issue in St. Paul. But I just want everybody to be clear, those two subjects are not going to be discussed in this conference committee without some kind of provision in one of the tax bills. So those two issues are dead in the conference committee discussions if there's not some reference to them in the bill, and that, I mean, that's what our Senate rules say. So, Senator Moa.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to pick a fight with my friends from Minneapolis if their objection is that there's some concerns about the NRP project. So I'd like to divide the amendment. I move to divide the amendment to take separate votes on the deletions of Section 17 and Section 18.
Senator Ma, which would you like to vote on first?
Well, I guess maybe we should vote on Section 17 first.
Senator Rubin?
Mr. Chair, if I could just make a comment to both amendments that will come up. I understand why you want to talk about this in the conference committee, because these are very important proposals for the city and very important ways to spend this money. But I think we've overstepped our bounds again if we are going to require these cities to come and explain to us how they're using the LGA and to explain how they've chosen their priorities. That's beyond our scope. And so to insist that they come and pull them to the table is exactly what I think is overstepping. So I hope members will support the deletion for both amendments.
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do have maybe an alternative amendment. Maybe we can put that out in front of the committee for consideration.
Would you like to propose that before we vote on the WA suggestion?
Maybe as a substitute amendment. It's similar to your proposal, Mr. Chair. It changes the shall to may, or the must to may. I don't know. You know, maybe put it out there, see how the committee feels about that. It, you know, clearly doesn't change current state law, but it keeps a position in the bill. It's the A20.
Is this it?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogemiller.
I was an author of NRP. Let's not confuse the issues here. Senator Ortman is right. It is a mistake for St. Paul, in my judgment, to ever let the state legislature tell you how to spend your LGA. That's the issue. The issue is not River Center or NRP. The issue is the state legislature going to tell your city how to spend LGA? Senator Ortman is exactly correct. And I just think it's that simple. It's not a question of whether you support NRP or River Center. It's a question of whether you think the legislature should tell the city how to spend its LGA.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure the audio is working. I love being on the same side with Senator Pogemiller. I just want to make sure everybody takes note of the moment.
Mr. Chairman, I want to repeat Senator Nibble's comments. I totally appreciate you're just trying to help figure out a way to I totally appreciate that. But that's not the issue either. The issue just is this is a bad idea to do this, and we just shouldn't do it. And if somebody thinks money should go to the River Center Conventions Fund in the city of St. Paul, the mayor and the city council can do that. Same in Minneapolis. The mayor and the city council can use their LGA for NRP if they choose.
On the division of the amendment to delete Section 17... Any other discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Section 17 is deleted. On the Ortman motion to delete Section 18. Any other discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
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 The motion prevails. 18.
I would like a division, Mr. Chair.
On deletion of Section 18, all in favor of deleting Section 18, raise your hand. All against. The motion prevails. Section 18 is deleted. Other amendments. Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the 825 amendment. Mr. Chair and members, the 825 amendment is a small step forward in terms of the discussion about the future of professional football in Minnesota. It gets the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission and the Vikings together to provide some background information and do some initial work that would be provided then to the 2009 legislative session. There's no general fund money in this amendment. Again, an agreement would be reached between the Sports Facilities Commission and the Vikings regarding paying for the work that that we're requesting them to do. Mr. Terwilliger is here from the former Senator Terwilliger is here from the Sports Facilities Commission. I believe he is here. There he is right there. And so I think if members have questions, he's also available to answer questions about the amendment.
Mr. Terwilliger.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Would you take just a couple minutes and tell us, I don't think the tax committee heard about the listening tours that that you took on the road this fall. And maybe if this amendment is something you think the Sports Commission is capable of getting put together, you know, over the next 10 months.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to be here. Nice to see you. And it won't take but a second. We were here a year ago before four different committees in the legislature and talked about the fact we were going out on a listening tour, which we did do in November on through January. We had 17 different public meetings basically talked about the facts of what the timetables are on the Metrodome with the Gophers going into their last season and the Twins into their last two seasons, and the Vikings use agreement ending after the 2011 season, which means in early 2012. We felt that and we will be back. We've got communication between the Senate and House local government committees to come back and present more detail on that, and I won't go into that any more than that today, except to say that we now talked with the public about the need to have a continuing presence of a multi-purpose public facility year-round for all types of events. Right now, the current Metrodome houses 300 event days a year, and of course included in that are the Gophers, Twins, and Vikings games. But the Vikings use agreement being that it ends up in 2011 becomes a point of urgency for us to have people aware of what is taking place and what the overall ramifications are from a dollar and cent standpoint. The language that is in this amendment, as I understand it, drafted by, I have looked at it, drafted by Dan Larson, would allow us to keep us on track and to allow us to keep a time frame in place. The urgency in it is that it obviously takes 32 months or so to construct a new or renovated, reconstructed type of a facility where we'd utilize as much of the infrastructure as possible. And when we do that, there's also a time frame ahead of there that we need to have for design work and to get answers as to what needs to go into any working agreements between the Vikings and the Sports Commission, as well as what needs to take place as far as the actual detail of a year-round multi-purpose retractable roof facility. And so this would allow us to stay on that timeline. And it could cost us as much as $2 million to do this. The cost would be shared between the Vikings and the Sports Commission. There'd be no tax dollars here. It would be monies that would come out of the current reserves of the Sports Commission. And it would allow us to be more specific on what we're talking about as far as costs for a new facility. $2 million that would be expended would save probably about $45 to $50 million in inflated costs if we have to wait to continue to do that. The bill would not decide whether the stadium gets built, but it would provide information to the policymakers as to what the costs are and what the various sources and possible uses of revenues would be. I might mention that even as we speak tomorrow in Detroit, the NCAA representatives are meeting with some of our representatives to talk about future NCAA Final Fours. Obviously, we need a decision on this to be able to attract a future NCAA Final Four, and there are 10 cities currently vying for these events in the future, and we have representatives that will be in Detroit meeting with the NCAA people tomorrow to discuss that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will stand for any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lugar, with the listening tour that was done last year, how much did that cost?
Well, I don't know. They can't give you the exact number, but approximately $400,000 with all the various contracts and expenses that went into it.
Because my concern is that I heard from several people who asked why they, if the goal was to find out where the public was on the financing of a new stadium, that a poll would have been much cheaper, and that people said the listening tour was more promotion of a new facility. I guess that's what I'm concerned about here, that this is a, it's designed to promote, it's based on the assumption that we should be building a new, publicly financed at least, part of a new NFL stadium with retractable roof and so on. And I guess I don't think that's the appropriate role of the commission. I know we disagree on that, but to me, this is the first step in the state making a commitment to put hundreds of millions of dollars into a football stadium. And I guess if I thought the Sports Facilities Commission was negotiating and challenging the NFL's requests or the team's requests, it would be one thing. But this, to me, sounds like we're all at the same side of the table, and we want you guys to pay for, we want to take it out of the Sports Facilities Committee budget to design something, present all the costs, everything to us, not in a neutral way, but as a promotional way. And to me, this is the first time we're voting on something here that's the first step towards funding a new football stadium that I think a lot of Minnesotans think is a lousy idea.
Mr. Chair, if this is a question now, let me respond to, sure, to both of your comments. First, as far as the listening tours, this is not an easy issue when you start proceeding out talking about it. As I mentioned, 300 event days of the year are held in the facility at the current time. It's very important that for the state of Minnesota that people be aware of exactly what is going to take place if you no longer have this type of a facility available. So the intent of the commission's tour was to go out and talk about the time frame, talk about the facts that this would be the one and only remaining year-round roofed facility for types of events such as high school football playoffs or whatever type of event you're looking at. And so it certainly was not one to go out and promote as much as it is to educate. It certainly is a need to educate the public, and I think that we attempted to have the policymakers. Invitations were extended to the various legislative people in each district to give them that opportunity to be there to hear what the public says. The expressions were very strong from a lot of different groups about the need for a continuing type of a facility such as this. Secondly, when you talk about this being the first step, I guess education is always the first step, and that's what we're talking about here is putting together alternatives, facts, figures. It's impossible, for example, when you're talking about a facility that is like this, to know exactly where you're at in costs until you get some design specifics so you can tell exactly what you're talking about. Are you talking about this or that or the other thing in that facility? You need to have that specific design down there, or you could be considerably off as far as what the total cost might be.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Schwilliger, though, the idea of keeping the Metrodome open, which is a public facility that we own and operate and has worked very well in many ways despite the ridicule over the years, the presumption in your entire statement is that it will be gone and it must be gone. And I understand that that a lot of people think the Vikings are going to leave if they don't have us build them a new stadium. And I recall Mr. Wilf told us that he was going to stay. He was committed to keeping the Vikings in Minnesota permanently with or without a new stadium. Whether we have to play in the Metrodome or wherever, we are committed to staying. He promised us that. And I guess I'm I think the whole presumption of this study and your comments are that either we don't trust him, we think he's lying, or we think perhaps that he's going to build a new place on his own, and then we're going to be stuck with the Metrodome without a major league tenant in it. And in that case, it seems to me that the study and the education and the cost analysis should, if you're going to say, well, we think it's important to have this year-round climate-controlled venue, that we should be at least talking about what it would cost to keep the Metrodome open if Mr. Wilf decided to build his own facility elsewhere. But none of that's even considered. The assumption is if we don't participate in major way of financing a new football stadium, that he's not telling the truth, that he's going to move, and he won't consider moving to another facility in Minnesota. He'll move to another state, and that we can't even consider, with or without him in the Metrodome, we can't consider keeping it open. And it seems to me the 10, 12, whatever million dollars a year it costs to operate, minus any revenues you'd collect, would be a reasonable alternative to consider to options that I hear of $400 or $500 million possibly in public money going to subsidizing his new stadium. So why not look at what the Metrodome would be like with or without the Vikings in the future as an alternative? This goes past that. That assumes that decision to trash the Metrodome has been made.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, first let me make 2 points. And the first would be a defense of the current ownership of the Minnesota Vikings. I can honestly say that they have never made any threats that they're going to move. Every statement I've ever heard them state, Senator Marty, has been, as you stated, that they have indicated that they do not plan to relocate. They didn't buy the team to move it. They look at this as an invaluable asset that belongs in the state of Minnesota. However, one of the benefits that we have in having the listening tour was to sharpen our own focus on what the costs are involved just with the current facility. Just if we had had the listening tour ahead of time, I could have been handing you a report, and we will make that available at the appropriate time. But the operating budget's approximately $15 million a year. The Twins and the Gophers income into that $15 million is 2.1. So you drop the cost of operating at least by income by at least $2 million when you lose those two tenants. However, the Vikings' share of that pie is $6.4 million. You take out that $8.5 million and look at the facility and how it would operate if you did not have that team here. Then you start looking at what those numbers are you're talking about. We have looked at those. I would suggest that this will be one of the things that would need to be looked at in any study as to what is the option if you do not have the Minnesota Vikings in that facility. However, let me just state that if you avail yourself of the information from a competitive standpoint for the Vikings in that current facility, out of the 32 teams in the NFL, they rank 32nd in revenue from the stadiums. And while they may not be losing money at this particular point, what is going to be the inevitable outcome of this is as you look at any kind of reasonable projection and visit with other people around the league, as well as look at the information from the NFL, is that they will be increasingly placed in a non-competitive position with their competition. And so you have to be realistic. If you expect to be able to keep that type of a team, that franchise in Minnesota, where certainly the bulk of the majority of the people would like to see it stay, you have to be realistic about those numbers and realize that it's going to be a matter of time until we have to confront this. So right now is when we should be confronting it. I would assume that all the costs on this study that's going to be ready for the policymakers is going to incorporate all those types of information that are needed.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I'd like to correct two things I think I would argue have a maybe misunderstanding of. You said that Mr. Wilf has not made any threats. I was trying to say he's made a promise to keep the team here. I agree he hasn't made any threats. He hasn't even hinted at he's actually made a promise to this committee that he would never pull the team. And the other one, in terms of he's not losing money now, I would say, yeah, that's true. He's making money hand over fist right now, as are the other NFL teams. I agree he's not making quite as much, but his previous owner, who also wanted us to build this, more than tripled his investment in 7 years. Most of our constituents aren't making money that fast, and I think the idea that we should subsidize this assumes, this study, this agreement that we're asking for here assumes we've made some decisions that I don't think we as a legislature have made, and I don't think showing up as an amendment to a tax bill on the day we're passing out the tax bill is appropriate time to put it in.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to incorporate in my amendment something I think that better reflects what we're trying to do here, and I would go to line 1.7 delete negotiate an agreement and in its place insert develop a plan. I think that better reflects what we're trying to do in taking a step forward here to at least have in front of us that discussion in the 2009 legislative session.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Larson raised the same question that I had. We seem like we have discussion about building stadiums almost on a perennial basis in recent years, and yet at the same time I was wondering myself about whether or not we would allow the Met Sports Facility Commission to actually negotiate the agreement. I think that's something that I would want to keep closer to home in the legislature rather than have the facility do it. Looking at developing a plan, if that's the case, do we even need to have this amendment? Do we authorize sports commissions to do they need our permission to develop a plan if that's the direction we're going in?
Senator Larson,
maybe you may know.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, I don't know that I have the definitive answer to that about whether it's necessary. I think it's necessary for us to provide guidance that we would like to see that plan developed, considered, and all that hard work that needs to occur before we really have the opportunity to decide whatever it is, whether it's a good idea or not. And so I think our ability, again, in this with this amendment is to take a really small step forward to say, please come back to us with fully developed the concepts that are necessary for us to consider on whether or not we move down this road with a new facility.
Well, Senator Larson, I don't know if you answered my question or not. Do they need the authority from us, the legislature, to talk about a plan? I see that down on line 20 of page 1, there's costs of architects, engineers, and other design consultants must be shared between the parties, and I'm assuming the parties would include the Vikings as well as the Sports Facility Commission. Is that correct?
Senator Larson.
Curious if some of those are your constituents.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Limmer, Chair Williger would like to share his thoughts on this.
Thank you, Senator Larson. Senator Limmer, I believe that it would be appropriate to have your direction as far as the expenditure of funds. We could be talking up to $2 million in funds in various contracts. And while those costs would be shared between the Vikings and the Sports Commission, it is more than we normally would be expending on studies. And so at some point, however, these dollars are going to have to be expended if you're going to be able to make an intelligent decision as far as what is what. So,
but
we would think it would be appropriate to have this assistance.
But, Madam Chair and Senator Twilliger, this would authorize the Minnesota or the Metropolitan Sports Facility to share in these expenses as they research either going toward the direction of negotiating this or developing a plan for this. I'm just trying to put it in a, let's say, a private sector perspective. If, let's say, I owned a piece of land and someone wanted to develop something and I wanted to lease the land, and I wanted to enter into a negotiation to use the land in that purpose, I don't think it should be my responsibility as owner of the property to help develop the architectural drawings for that developer. And we're kind of asking the state on behalf of the Metropolitan Sport Facility to pony up some of the expense for the architects, engineers, and design consultants for this. I'm just thinking, if there is a business out there who is planning on making money on their business venture, and they want, and their hope is to have the state pay for the facilities or a sizable portion of it, why would we want to impose the cost on the Metropolitan Sports Facility in the first place? If they're the ones developing, they're the ones that are going to stand to make profit on it. The state necessarily isn't if it goes down the same path as the other sports stadiums that we've helped create. There's been no sharing of profit. There's been no sharing of anything like that. I guess I'm wondering what is in the best state interest to help pay for those development, engineer, and architectural costs.
Mr. Twilliger.
Mr. Chair. Senator Limmer. Well, I don't know that we necessarily disagree on how this would proceed. However, as a person who's negotiated leases from landlords, I've expected the landlord to come to me with the design and the appropriate opportunity before I've executed the lease, and I think we're talking about the same thing. This is a unique partnership between the Metrodome, between the Sports Commission and the various tenants that we have. But in the particular case of the Vikings, where they provide a significant portion of our operating revenue, having the Vikings there allows us to have a facility that is a year-round public venue, so, and having that venue allows us to have the Vikings, so it's a kind of a two-way street. The numbers will show, as I mentioned, of the operating revenue and income and expense out of the Metrodome, that we would end up without going through our reserves very quickly if we did not have the NFL franchise in there. So what does that portend going forward for policymakers if you don't have them in that facility, whether they stay here in Minnesota or relocate elsewhere? You still have the need to be to know what you're going to do and what that is, and I think we need to have these designs and these numbers before the Vikings can commit and before we know where we're at. And I would remind the committee that the charge of the Sports Commission, when it was initially established way back before any of us were in the legislature, was one that retained not everybody. I think we had one person who I know of was maybe had more experience on this than others, and that's Senator Langseth. But we're charged with retaining professional football and baseball in Minnesota, and so we take that charge very seriously.
Members of council, Senator Larson, we incorporated develop a plan. Council has this. Says in other places in the amendment we need to incorporate some other language in reference to your oral incorporation. Council?
Mr. Chairman, members, on page 1, line 5, delete agreement and insert plan. Page 1, line 18, also delete agreement and insert plan. On line 19, delete the comma and on line 20, delete everything until the period.
Senator Larson incorporates that change. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Larson, I understand you're trying to get to the place where we can make some progress. And you say a small step, but I think even plan is too big a step. And I think that I'd like to offer an oral amendment to change the word plan to recommendation. I think that they can come back with a recommendation for us, and we can consider the recommendation. I think that's an appropriate step, but I think a plan, an agreement, takes us too far down the road. And so I would hope the members would consider the word recommendation as opposed to plan.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ortman, that's a better word to use. Recommend is fine. I mean, the bottom line is the discussion is going to be back here at the legislature.
We need their expertise. We're asking for them today to provide us the expertise next year. And if that comes in the form of a recommendation versus a plan, I'm comfortable with that. And so I would additionally, it can either be an amendment to the amendment, or I would incorporate that as well. It's up to you, Senator Ortman. You want that as an amendment?
Isn't an incorporation to yours well, would be fine?
Maybe
friendly
counsel
amendment.
Can suggest how Senator Larson might incorporate the recommendation rather than plan.
Mr. Chairman, members, I think it simply, in each place where we had used the term plan, substitute recommendations.
Senator Ortman?
That would be my amendment, Mr. Chair.
Senator Larson, you incorporate that?
So incorporated, Mr. Chair.
Any other discussion? Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Larson, I have a question about on line 1.10. It seems to me that the inclusion of a retractable roof as a necessity of the recommendations may be a bit too strong in that, if I remember correctly, a retractable roof for the Twin Stadium added, you know, a couple hundred million dollars. So what I was thinking is perhaps the retractable roof, if you're agreeable to this, could be incorporated somewhere down in line 19 so that it doesn't, the impression isn't left that any further recommendations or plans do not have to incorporate a retractable roof, that at least the option of having a fixed roof is included instead of just a retractable roof. If you'd be, I'm wondering what your comments are on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben. I guess I'd like to hear from Mr. Twilliger on that. I think there are some issues as it relates to the roof. Whether there is one, there's a fixed one or a retractable one, and maybe we could benefit from his testimony.
Mr. Chair, Senator Larson, Senator Sieben, we've not developed the plans yet to this point to know exactly where all the costing is. However, it's anticipated that the roof would cost approximately $200 million, and retractable, a little over $200 million. A small portion of that makes it retractable versus fixed. Like $25 million, as I understand it, but I could be a little bit off in those numbers. The reason we incorporated, I've been talking about a retractable roof in the initial design work that's been there, is that it allows Minnesotans to be able to open it and shut it for various events throughout the summer months, but recognize that we do need a year-round climate-controlled facility. So, when we come back with the costs, we would certainly anticipate that those design costs would include retractable versus fixed, but we would very much believe that for the purposes of the NFL, that all the new state-of-the-art facilities are pretty much are coming in now with the retractable roof and the ability to be able to incorporate that. So,
Mr. Chair and
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Twilliger, as long as it is outlined in the recommendation or plan that the cost differential between having a retractable roof or not, then I'm comfortable with that.
Well, are we going to accomplish that in the recommendations?
Mr. Chair, yes, we can accomplish that in there. We believe very strongly. Everything's going to come back here. It's going to be a recommendation coming back here with a very, you know, what should be here, what the size should be, exactly how it should be, what part of the infrastructure can we use. And so I don't think that we're in any point of disagreement.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, watching the stadium fights for a long time, it always starts with little things and then a little bit more foot in the door each time. This is an amendment that's being offered in tax committee, not in any policy committee, the day we're supposed to pass out the tax bill. This tax bill already has taxpayers paying $200 million to put in a parking ramp for a shopping mall. We can't afford housing for people. We can't afford to take care of our schools. We can't afford transportation. We can't afford environment and natural resources. And now we're going to add on here the first step. And I agree, it's only a first step and a small hint. But Mr. Terwilliger's comments clearly make it the idea, the assumption. It's made a lot of assumptions already in here that we should be moving ahead on this. I just think we've already put $200 million into a parking ramp. And now putting in the first step, and this is not the money, this is just, well, it's some public money going into the study, $1 million maybe. But it's the first step, and I just think we ought to say no. So I'm going to ask for a roll call on this because I think we should say no now. let them come back and have the debate over whether we should do it before we start putting the plan or the recommendations together.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Marty. The only thing I can suggest in being a salesman myself is beware of the presumptive close, because that's essentially what this is. It's already assuming or presuming to get the potential buyer to sign on the bottom line when it comes time.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Marty, I'm hoping you'll at least support the amendment to make it only a recommendation and not a plan. And I think that's what's before the committee right now, is whether this is going to be termed a recommendation or an agreement or a plan. And I hope you'll you support that amendment.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, for clarification, I thought that was incorporated in.
It is.
It is.
Oh. Then, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. I would offer another amendment then. And I think that will address Senator Marty's concerns and maybe some of mine. I think that there's undue pressure in this proposal in terms of time. And I think that we should change this to say that a report on the agreement must be presented to the legislature by January 15, 2010. Because if we say it has to be done by January 15th, everybody feels all the pressure, we negotiate, and we haven't really given opportunity for a consensus. We haven't given opportunity for more public testimony, for more public input. And I think that if we put this back a year, the parties won't be able to use time as pressure for negotiation.
Senator Ortman moves on line 1.23, delete 2009 and insert 2010. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would resist that amendment. It appears that the Sports Facilities Commission is prepared to be able to do this work in that period of time, and we really can't have the discussion about what is in a recommendation until we have those recommendations before us. And if they believe that this is enough time to develop those, I think that we should at least entertain the recommendation by then. And this, again, does not do anything toward building the facility. It just says we want to have that background information available to us in a timely manner, presuming the Sports Facilities Commission can provide that. And I'd just maybe perhaps get confirmation on that from Mr. Terwilliger, but I think the timeline is reasonable.
Mr. Chair, Senator Larson, Senator Ortman, yes, I would agree. I believe the time to develop the information is now. You know, one of the things I maybe didn't emphasize it enough when I was making my opening comments was that time is money here. If we're going to do something, we need to recognize that the biggest detriment we have in doing many things from an infrastructure standpoint is time, because what it does do is it pushes it back. By expending possibly up to $2 million is what we're talking about here to get the early design work done, we could perhaps save as much as $50 million, $40 to $50 million in actual construction costs. And so what we would think would be appropriate would be to proceed. We started out nearly 2 years ago, when it became apparent that we were going to have this new stadium for the Twins and the Gophers, in looking at what the responsible thing from a public agency was to do as far as making plans for the future of that particular facility. We have 20 acres of prime downtown real estate that we're talking about here. We have a major public investment. We need to be about knowing what all the options are, and I would submit that it's appropriate to do that so you have that information, the policymakers have that, at the earliest possible time so that they know exactly what the future decision should be.
Senator Ortman, on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, Senator Terwilliger, there is nothing with this oral amendment that would suggest you can't come back next year. If there's an agreement and there's public support for it or not, you can come back in January 15, 2009. All this says is that you must come back by 2010. You can come back in December of 2008 if you want. It just says it maybe just releases the pressure valve just a little bit in case there isn't a clear recommendation and allows you to consider all the options. It just takes the pressure valve off. And so I would hope that the members would support this, and you would too. If you're really ready to go with an agreement or a recommendation, nothing will stop you from that.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I have a different suggestion. It's not to this amendment.
Today she knows it.
Members, on the Ortman oral amendment on line 1.23, delete 2009, insert 2010. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Division.
Division being requested. All those in favor of the Ortman amendment, raise your hand. All those against?
This is 09-10. 09-10.
Mr. Chair, I was confused. I'm on this side.
Yeah. The amendment does not prevail. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, I have a kind of a lengthy oral amendment. I'll read it and Council can help me to see if it makes sense. We can either add this to the fourth clause, that fourth paragraph, or create a fifth one. And it suggests that we make use of a memorabilia tax in the evaluation of the financing. So here's how I composed it. Evaluation of the use of a new tax on sports memorabilia as a source of financing repayment must be included in the recommendation.
That's what he's doing.
And Senator Dibble, where did you think we might include that? Or
either attach it to the end of paragraph 4 there on line 14 or create a new paragraph 5.
Too much.
Yes, good. Here, because this talks about an analysis.
So I think Council has a suggestion, Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, you might want to add that actually to that final paragraph that describes elements that the analysis would consider.
Whatever Council recommends.
That's as Council suggests where the oral Dibble amendment would best fit.
Mr. Chair, members, I would recommend that we add that on page 1, line 17, after the period. Insert, the analysis must also include an evaluation of the use of a new tax on sports memorabilia to finance the facility.
Senator Larson, would you like to incorporate that?
I'll incorporate that, Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, can I make it? Or other facilities? Existing facilities that already exist. River Center, Target Center.
So,
Senator Dibble,
if I could just speak to it, that would make me much more comfortable with this proposal, this amendment overall. I make a distinction between the mall, the action we took on the mall, and this. And you know, my position on stadiums has always been pretty clear. I don't believe they necessarily add a whole lot to a region's economic activity. I think they just kind of move entertainment dollars around. I think the mall, there's a rational argument that the mall brings a whole lot of folks here, creates new revenues for the state. So I don't think stadiums in and of themselves are bad unless we're diverting public resources that could otherwise go to, you know, public benefits. I think when you start confining the sources for financing to those which are more directly related to the facility itself and those who are using it, I become much more comfortable with these ideas.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, could Council just advise us a little bit about what items get taxed? Because if I remember this discussion from before, we were taxing jerseys, and not just professional jerseys with the names on it, but the jerseys for Little League and everything else. Now, is that still part of this proposal?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, there's no detail at all presented in this particular language, and it would be up to the legislature ultimately to decide what items would be subject to a sports memorabilia tax.
Well, Senator Dibble.
I think, Mr. Chair, when we're talking about sports memorabilia, we're talking about, you know, the kind of merchandise that's licensed by the leagues themselves. It's memorabilia that relates to the teams and their logos and that sort of thing, not little kids'
Mr.
Equipment,
Chair.
Sports equipment.
Mr. Chair.
We're getting a little bogged down here.
Right. Mr. Chair.
I agree.
Mr. Chair, right here.
Mr. Twilliger.
Thank you. I think it's fair to suggest that we will study whatever. It's a recommendation that's coming back with an information. So whatever information you want to have, even if it's not included here in this amendment, we certainly are going to be looking at all phases of that, and we certainly will keep that in mind as we proceed, no matter what your definition is here.
Senator Marty suggested a roll call. On the 825.
No, it's incorporated, Mr. Chair.
Well,
it's been incorporated.
Correct. Correct.
Oh, you're talking
Senator Larson incorporated that. We're going to take the roll on the 825 amendment.
Mr. Chair, for clarification, are you saying that the memorabilia tax portion has been incorporated?
Correct.
And that's now part of this proposal?
Correct.
Yeah. I'm clear. Thank you.
And I'm ready to
Senator
vote.
Senator Dibble?
Yes.
Senator Johnson?
Yes.
Senator Langseth?
Yes.
Senator Larson?
Yes.
Senator Limmer?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
No.
Senator Kobemiller?
Yes.
Senator Sinjin?
No.
Senator Sieben?
Yes.
Senator Skoy?
Yes.
Bach?
Yes.
Rod, you should move the bill so we can get out of here.
Bills 9-4. The A25 amendment is adopted. Other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, I have the A17 amendment. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Twilliger. And good luck.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a sales tax and use provision that has been in front of the committee for a number of years and actually been in our bills. The reason it isn't included this year was because they were holding their special election on 2012, and we didn't think it was necessary, being that the election is that far out. They have made significant progress, the city of Winona has, and they've moved their special election up to 2009. I think it's appropriate to include this at this time, and Senator Erickson Ropes is here to speak on behalf of the A17 amendment.
Members, this is a provision we had in last year's bill. And the election was going to be held in 8. The only reason it wasn't put in the bill that's in front of you was we had gotten a communication from the city that they had other things on the ballot in 2008 and they didn't want to move forward. So we only incorporated sales tax, last year's local option sales tax provisions that cities actually requested. So what this would do is incorporate last year's language, would move the election out from 2008 to 2009. And Senator Erickson Ropes, does the city support this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yes, this just gives us an opportunity to identify a date change. You've already approved the policy and everything. We're just switching the date.
Any other discussion, members? On the A17 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The A17 is adopted.
Thank you very
Senator
much.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A7 amendment. Mr. Chair, while it's being passed out, I'll just describe it. This is similar to a bill that I had that's already included in the bill, in the larger bill. It allows for the personal property tax exemption for a renewable energy electrical generation facility.
This is
the Lower San Anthony Falls hydroelectric project. It just extends the date to a personal property tax exemption that they already have. Their construction has been delayed by the collapse of the I-35W bridge. And we have folks here who can describe the project in more detail.
Senator Dibble, I thought when we discussed this, we were going to consider the personal property tax exemption, but not the exemption from sales tax.
Correct.
Because that's a cost.
Is that in here, Mr.
That's
Church?
A cost item. So I think, Senator Dibble, we need to delete from lines 1.18 through the remainder of the amendment. Is that correct, Counsel?
Through 1.22.
Through 1.22.
Oh, Mr. I apologize. Yes, let's do that. I didn't realize that wasn't out yet.
Senator Dibble incorporates the deletion of lines 1.18 to 1.22. And members, that deletes the sales tax exemption on the construction material. Does the rest of the amendment gives them the personal property tax exemption as long as it starts construction before 2011? Senator Dole.
Mr. Chair, never mind. Okay. Well, thank you.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sundrum.
I don't think they make 10 megawatt windmills yet, but if and when they do, now there's a personal property tax exemption on there, but there's a wind power production tax that they pay. Is there any comparable tax that this would pay? I'm just thinking in terms of comparing a windmill setup to a hydro facility. Or is that...
Sure, we have Robert Larson from Nelson Energy who can answer that question specifically about this facility.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, could you, I'm not sure I understand completely your question.
And to the witness and Mr. Chair, if I understand it, I'm just trying to compare windmills in this case to a hydro turbine, and my understanding is on a windmill situation, there's no personal property tax, but there is a wind power production tax. On this one, it's proposed, as I understand it, that there be no personal property tax, but is there any other kind of tax that would be comparable to, for instance, a wind power production tax? Is there any other tax which would apply to a facility like this? Just create the equality between windmills and hydro turbines.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there is an incentive payment for the production of hydro electric energy, and we are attempting to try and get an extension of that for the start period and the stop period. And those funds come out of the fund that was established and paid into by Xcel Energy or NSP as a result of the rental of space to preserve or store spent rods. So there is an incentive payment. What we're asking here, and there's really two reasons for our request, we're asking for an exemption of the sales and use tax and an exemption of the personal property tax. We were here before this committee in 2006 asking for such an extension. We were reasonably confident that we would complete it by 2009. I can tell you that nowhere in our plan was the collapse of 35W, but I can also tell you to be quite candid, we also didn't predict the time that it took us or would take us to go through the federal process of approval. You have to understand that hydro energy basically fell off the map in the late 80s. One of the toughest questions we've faced in this process that we started in 2001 was how long will it take? And that is just one of those incredibly difficult questions. The selection, for instance, of all dams as critical infrastructure, therefore having to comply with Homeland Security and one more level of review, all those type of things compound. So that's why we're here again asking for that extension. I can tell you that the development of hydroelectric energy is very expensive. Only the most optimistic start in this process.
Mr. Chair, maybe it's probably going beyond what I was really asking. Okay. I was sort of asked when you put a windmill up, we tax the power that the windmill produces. When we put a hydro unit up, I guess we don't tax the power that the hydro produces, or at least this one.
Council?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sundrum, I think you're correct. There is in the tax scheme that applies to wind energy, there's an alternative production tax,
right.
But there is nothing comparable for the hydro.
And that was my question. Right. Okay.
Senator Dole.
Sure. I do believe, though, that there is a distinction between personal property tax and property tax. There's often confusion, and I believe we will property tax, real estate property tax will be paid here.
Right. We need, to the witness, we need your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is Robert Larson. I am connected with the developer, which is SAF Hydroelectric.
On the A7 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails. The A7 is adopted. Other amendments. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, members, I have a great amendment. It's the A11 amendment. It will put property tax relief into this bill. This is the elderly property tax cap.
I think it's been handed out on the A11 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this amendment has been offered as a bill last year and as an amendment recently on the Senate floor. What this amendment does is it would create a base year, 2008, for seniors in the state of Minnesota, seniors that are 65 years or older and that have lived in their homes for 25 years or more and make less than $60,000 in income. Would be given a cap on their property taxes so that 2009 would be tax payment at the same level as 2008 and every year thereafter. Unless there's some kind of a change in the assessment or change in income, they would be allowed a cap on their taxes. This also provides for the Department of Revenue to certify those taxpayers for our counties so that they can determine who's been certified for this program. It's essentially a revenue-neutral proposal. It doesn't cost anything for the state to provide this relief. It does shift a bit of a burden to the local counties and cities, but I think it's a very small burden. There would be, I think it's, I'm going to tell you how many residents are affected by this. I can find the note on this. I think it was 100. There is 100,000 senior citizens in long-term homesteads that would be affected by this cap. And the locals would be given an opportunity to either raise their levy to cover the balance or to spread this around to other taxpayers. But I think, members, this is really important relief. There are senior citizens in our communities that can't pay their property taxes, and they'd like some relief to at least say that it's not going to continue to go up. They are on fixed incomes, as actually most Minnesotans are, but they're struggling with health care costs right now. We've imposed some sales taxes on them and gas taxes, and I think that this also helps to address the regressivity in our tax system as a result of some of those changes, and I hope the members will support this.
Senator Ortman, on the amendment, will those properties be subject to excess operating levies for schools?
Mr. Chair, in the amendment, if it's voted in support, yes. If a referendum is passed, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Ortman, you know, I normally think that the best way to do property tax relief is by putting state money into the property tax system to offset the locals' needs for additional revenue. I historically have not been supportive of freezes because it does shift onto other property taxpayers, but I think in this situation you've got this fairly narrowly drafted. It's got a relatively low income criteria, and in order to keep this issue alive, I think I'll support your amendment.
Senator Langseth.
Well, Mr. Chair, we do have the circuit breaker, which takes care of all income levels. You know, just going by my own family, we've got five generations, and I don't see where one generation should be exempt from it any more than another generation. I've even got a grandson who has a household now, and I got a great grandson. Why should they somehow be paying for part of of my property taxes. I just don't see that. I think the circuit breaker is the right way to go about it. It goes by people's income. It goes by their ability to pay. It does affect a number of senior citizens. So I really don't support it. I think it's just shifting in many cases from one generation to another. And in many cases, these young families starting out need more relief than some of us old fogies.
Senator Moi.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate what Senator Ortman is trying to do here, and I'm a little bit concerned about the 25-year limit on ownership or occupation on the homestead. I think that that's a really long time for somebody, requiring somebody who fits this income category and age to have occupied on the property. And so I just wonder where Senator Ortman came up with the rationale for the 25 years.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My comment will address both of the concerns raised by Senator Langseth and Senator Moi. This bill is not generational. It does recognize contribution to the community. That's the whole point, is that someone who's lived in their home for 25 years has built the schools, has paid for the community centers, for the government centers, for the police, for the infrastructure in the community. And we recognize that. And we don't want seniors who have contributed to their community for a solid 25 years to feel the pressure to leave the community because they can't afford the property taxes anymore. And that's the justification.
Senator Ortman, how wed are you to the $60,000 in income? That seems a little high. Could we consider taking that number down some? Well, that's $5,000 a month in income. I think for most of us would think that's a pretty good retirement income for somebody. Senator Ortman, would you have any thought about maybe bringing that $60,000 number down? I think people might be a little more comfortable with it if we could bring that number down some.
Mr. Chair, I would support bringing it back down to $50,000. Hopefully that would earn some support in this committee.
Any discussion, members, on the $60,000 in income?
Well, Mr. Chair, most of the people in this category don't have house payments to make and so on, so I think $50,000 is quite high. Of course, I'm going to vote against it anyway, so I guess that doesn't really matter.
Senator Langseth, is there a level that we could get your support for the Ortman Amendment?
Probably not.
Mr. Chair, I just wonder if Senator Langseth is the only member of the committee who might qualify for this income, considering.
Careful.
He's close.
Senator Ortman, how about force? The chair would vote for it at 40.
Mr. Chair, I'll take 40.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just reading recently on the mortgage crisis in the state of Minnesota that many older homeowners actually have put their children's college education on their home. And so a lot of the other expenses of rehabbing a house that they've owned for 25 years has actually been added in as second mortgages. So, Senator Langseth, I think it's more common that people are using the equity base in their homes as a finance tool to accommodate either their kids going through college. They don't, surprisingly, some people don't rely on government to get a loan for college education. They try to self-fund it themselves, even though it's difficult. So I think if we took a closer look at senior citizens and the use of their homes as an equity base, you'd find that there are mortgages and there are payments. And on a fixed income, it's more and more difficult for senior citizens to live in the home that they call, live in a house that they call their home for the past 25 years. So I think the amendment makes sense.
Senator Ortman incorporates that every place we have $60,000 in the bill, we change $60,000 to $40,000. On the A11 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Contrary, no?
No.
Motion prevails. The A11 is adopted.
Hope so.
Other amendments? Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of others. In the effort of trying to put some good solid tax relief in this bill for little money, I would offer the A12 amendment.
Senator Ortman, has the 812 been distributed? Senator Ortman on the 812 amendment.
Mr. Chair, this is my two-word amendment. I just want two words added to the tax bill, if you would. It's tuition and. What this does is it authorizes a tax credit for residents of the state of Minnesota that are paying dual tuition. Once they've actually paid the tuition, they would be entitled to a tax credit for that tuition. I think a qualifying income level is $37,500 or less, so that fits with the chair's general criteria here for people being low income. This will affect, I believe it's 75,000 tax returns. But these folks are already paying taxes for the public schools, and they've decided that those public schools are not serving their needs. And so they are investing their hard-earned income in these low-income levels to creating alternatives for their children that they think are in their children's best interest. I know that this provision has passed in the tax bill in previous years. This year it's being carried by Senator Hahn. And I would hope that this is something we could at least keep alive in the system. In my notes, it's about $9 million a year at this level. It's not a lot of money for the tax committee, for the overall budget of $35 billion. But to these families with $37,000 in income or less, this represents a commitment they're already making that could really help them.
Can somebody from the department come talk about this education tax credit? If I recall, when I think Governor Carlson put this in law, and it seemed to me there was an awful lot of abuse of this credit in the legislature, then in a following year made some changes to it. Can somebody from the department come talk to, are people taking this credit that aren't actually expending the money? And have we audited any returns to, this is a pretty significant expansion of the program. And Senator Ortman, we don't have $9 million?
Well,
the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair, I think there's $150 million on the bottom line. And I know that there are goals for that, but I'm not participating in those conversations. I've not been asked to participate in those conversations. And for me, I think if there's $150 million left on the bottom line, this is a smart way to spend $9 million and invest in education.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Haugen from the Department of Revenue. In the past, early on, we had quite a few problems. One of the problems when the program was initially put in was the credit was 100% credit. So in other words, you spent a dollar for books or something like, or homeschooling or something like that, or tutoring, you got it all back. So really the taxpayer or the parent really didn't have any incentive to go and shop for the best bang for their bucks for the dollar. So about a few years ago, we cut the credit rate from 100% down to 75%, if I remember correctly. So the taxpayer, at least they're paying 25% of the cost themselves, so they're more shopping around. So we have, you know, we still see errors in that area, but we haven't seen the outright abuse type things.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and sir, the problem was with the education expenses, education-related expense reimbursement, not with the tuition reimbursement.
Madam Chair, Senator Ortman, there is a deduction for tuition, but the education credit never allowed a tuition deduction for private school tuition. If you had outside tutoring, which you can consider instruction, that qualified, but not tuition for your regular school day.
Right. Mr. Chair, I want to make sure we're talking about the same thing here. The concerns about the dollar-for-dollar refunds were related to education-related expense reimbursements or tax credits, not related to this proposal in any way. This now would authorize a tax credit for tuition. It would still be limited in terms of the actual dollar amount credited, and would only apply to families with $37,500 in income.
Department, anything further? Thank you. Members, the $150 million that's on the bottom line on the spreadsheet, the Tax Committee raised that money and gave it to Senator Cohen to help the Finance Committee mitigate some of the cuts. If we were to adopt this, we would have to send a message over to the Finance Committee that they'd have to make an additional $9 million in cuts to keep the state budget in balance. So everybody just needs to keep that in mind. If this goes on, the Finance Committee is going to have to make an adjustment before their bill comes to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I would just say that this is good tax policy. This is an investment in education and in families that are already making this commitment and investing in positive educational choices for their children.
On the A-12 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Other amendments?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman.
I would offer the A-31 amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair and members, the A-31 amendment would adopt the governor's recommendation for military pay and pension subtraction phased in over 4 years. The actual financial impact would not be recognized until fiscal year 2010, and that was $11.4 million. It wouldn't affect our $150 million on the bottom line, but it certainly would provide real tax relief to veterans in the state of Minnesota and those in active military duty. And I think we should recognize the burden of those families financially, and I'm hopeful that the committee will support that. We can do that and still send $150 million to Senator Cohen and make a plan for the future that we are going to make these pensions and military salaries subtract them, and we can help these military families. I hope the members will do that.
Senator Ortman, what's the cost in 2011?
Mr. Chair and members, the cost from the fiscal note was 11.4 in 2010 and 16.9 in 2011 for a total of $28 million in the next biennium.
So, members, as good an idea as this is, you know, we've all heard about the looming budget forecast and what we're going to have facing us this time next year, and it's in the neighborhood of a $1 billion deficit for the next biennium without any budgetary inflation, and this would add $28 million in additional deficit to the next biennium. On the A-31 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
No. Motion does not prevail. Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I have another amendment. It is the A-30 amendment. Chair and members.
Senator Ortman.
The A-30 amendment is intended to provide real tax relief to Minnesotans that need tax relief. This would propose a 0.25% income tax cut for the lowest income tax bracket. It would affect all going up the chain, but it would be 0.25%. And last year, we looked at this bill and had a fiscal note prepared. In fiscal year 2008, it would have cost approximately $160 million. And, Mr. Chair and members, again, I'm not privy to where you're going to spend the $150 million, but I want to make very clear from my perspective that if we have $150 million, we should be creating real tax relief to Minnesotans that are struggling right now with the economic downturn, with loss of jobs and lost homes. And we can make a real difference in this bill. And I truly believe that, and I hope that you will become partners in that, because Minnesotans are counting on us for this relief. And so we can offer this amendment, we can pass this amendment, and we can go forward and have further conversations with Senator Cohen, and we can go back and look at this on the floor and find $150 million if you really need it. But I think this should be our priority for what we do with that $150 million.
Well, Senator Ortman, I just think we need to be clear. By lowering the percentage on the first bracket, every taxpayer that has taxable income benefits from that. I mean, regardless of your income, everybody gets an income tax cut. So this is not income sensitive in that every taxpayer who has income tax liability would be getting a cut under this. Isn't that accurate?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. But what it does is those people that make $31,860 a year would have a 0.25% income tax cut. And I think that's a significant cut for them. And so we're recognizing that. But as people go up in their income and they pay income tax on that level of income. And so we're not changing the middle income tax bracket or the upper income tax bracket. They still pay the current levels for those income levels. And so I think this is at least a start at real reform, recognizing the regressive nature of some of the changes that we've adopted.
Senator Ortman, I could support this, and I think the committee could support this, if we could raise the money at the top end and it was revenue neutral, I think, because that truly would make the income tax system more progressive. Senator Ortman?
Mr. Chair, I think my first attempt was to try and make this revenue neutral. I didn't know where the committee would go with that, so I just thought I would just propose what I think we should do. And how we pay for it maybe should be something discussed by this committee and by the chair and Senator Cohen. He seems to be having a chair in this committee, even though he's not serving here. But I think we should adopt this amendment, and we can work on where we come up with the balance.
Chair.
If it came out of the top bracket, I would not oppose that. I wouldn't. But I think we should say, as a matter of principle, as a tax committee, this is the right thing to do.
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Ortman, we've been kind of doing the Ortman run here. But most of us, in order to be involved in the process, we have these heard in committee and bills during the committee time, the committee work that we're doing. And then they have the opportunity for the committee to decide if it fits within the parameters that we have to bring this on if the, you know, as the bill is scheduled to go to the floor. Seems kind of disingenuous. If you really had the intent for us to make these changes to the income tax rate that, as the chair just said, I think we could have found a way to be supportive of. It should have been done during the committee, earlier committee time, so we had time to work on that.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could council refresh us on the threshold on the top bracket, the dollar amount?
Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, if you... $6,520.
Senator Johnson? Mr. Chairman, I'd agree with Senator Skoy. This would take a longer discussion because I agree with the chair's suggestion, but I'd like to raise those thresholds.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, the Metropolitan Sports Commission came out of nowhere today to change our tax bill. I've been told this is the place to do it, to offer an amendment. And I think that it's process over substance if we're going to say that we should not consider putting tax relief into the bill in the tax committee. And we have had conversations about changing the property tax brackets. I think this is an appropriate thing to do. The struggle that I've had in the preparation of this amendment from yesterday to today is that it's a fiscal note. It's difficult to determine that top tax bracket and how much we have to adjust it in order to pay for this. And so that was my struggle between yesterday and today, and I don't have that information. And if the committee would like, we can always adjust the amendment to say that the balance that we would have to raise should come out of that top tax bracket. We can do that, and Senate Council can be asked to prepare that for the Senate floor or to adopt it into this tax bill. But we can do it here. We should do it here, and we shouldn't let process overrun our intentions in this committee.
I think, Senator Ortman, that's kind of hard for us to do on the fly here. We probably have about an hour left here, but I mean, we could have found a way to make this revenue neutral. But I think, I mean, we can't send a bill to the Senate floor that creates a $160 million hole in the current biennium. I mean, the main work of this session is to try and balance the budget. Now, Senator Langseth would argue the main issue might be a bonding bill, but I think we all constitutionally, when we were sworn in, said we're going to balance. We're going to have a balanced budget, and this clearly would throw it out. Senator Ortman, if you want to spend the, and I think we probably got an hour. I mean, we'll commit whatever staff we can or revenue people we can to try and make it revenue neutral by increasing the percentage on the third tier or adding a fourth tier. I think there's probably an hour to do that. Whether we can get it perfect or not, I'm not certain. But if you really want to accomplish this and we can make it revenue neutral, I'd like to commit whatever resources we can to help do that today.
Well, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. I think that it is work of the work of the committee, and I think it is worth an hour of our time to look at the income tax structure in the state of Minnesota. And while we recognize the economic challenges of the state, and especially of these low-income earners, I would support, but I don't know whether the committee would support, the preparation of an amendment that would do exactly this and adjust the upper income tax bracket to pay for it. If they would, then I would ask that we prepare that amendment. But I don't know whether the committee would prefer the fourth income tax bracket. I don't think that'll pass here. I don't think I can support that. But I can support the changing that top tax bracket to pay for these changes.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, I think if we're going to take the hour and make the discussion, we do have to in-depth discuss the fourth tier and the dollars.
I heard Senator Ortman say that she'd like to make a change in the third tier to pay for it rather than add a fourth one.
Mr. Chairman, I'm without looking at all the numbers, I think that will affect way too many people, the third tier. I'd like to establish, or at least have the conversation.
Who from the department is here? What data do we have at our fingertips that if we gave you an hour, you could find us? What do we need? Senator Ortman, about $160 million a year?
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Anyone from the department, can they?
Mr. Chair, it's actually
less
than.
Tell us how quick we could help Senator Ortman find $160 million in the in a fourth tier.
Mr. Chair, the fiscal note to me looks like it goes down in the out years, the cost.
Mr. Manson?
Mr. Chair, Jack Manson with the Department of Revenue. I would have to call back to Dr. Wilson and our research staff to see how long that would take. I don't know if it really takes that long or not, but I'm sure they could ramp up. If it's the intention to increase the fourth tier, they probably could do that in a short time.
Senator Ortman, how would you like to proceed? You like to vote on it or withdraw it and take some other amendments and try to bring something back that's revenue neutral?
Mr. Chair, I think we should go forward with this. I don't want to ask for a vote on this right now because I can, you know, I have a sense of the committee. But I do think that we should prepare an amendment that would, two versions, one that would, if we can, one that would adjust the third bracket and the other one that would create a fourth bracket at the level of $250,000, if that's what Senator Johnson would like, and I would defer to her. I would support the first one. Not clear on the second one, but I think it's worth our coming back after the floor session, if necessary, Mr. Chair, to vote on this.
Senator Ortman, how about if you withdraw the amendment and we recess until 12:30? We'll go upstairs, go into session for a little bit. And, Mr. Manson, can you have revenue work with Senator Ortman to try and develop a revenue-neutral income tax shift, I guess?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And the number of families affected.
And if we can develop some kind of run with that, that would be helpful. Senator Ortman withdraws the 8:30 amendment. The committee's in recess until 12:30.
Senator Stevenson, coming back.